This is the Horse Radio Network.
What a beautiful day for horses in the morning.
Good Wednesday morning, everybody. I am Glenda Geek from Ocala, Florida.
And I'm Jamie Jennings from Phoenix, Arizona. And you're listening to Horses in the Morning on the Horse Radio Network. It's September 2nd, episode 1248, brought to you by our auditor and listeners. Thank you very much. Good morning, Horse World.
Big Wednesday, the day you face your own biggest challenge. The day you risk it all. The day you either distinguish yourself or fade into the crowd.
Hang on, we're hitching a ride.
Daddy, I want another pony.
I put 40 hours in this weekend, man, it's only Wednesday. I've been cussing this damn heat all day long, there's got to be another way. So I pick up my guitar and I write a song. Everybody hears and they sing along. Hey, hey.
Okay. Can I just vent for 5 minutes, maybe 5 seconds? It's somewhere in between, about my freaking dog. Do you know what I've been doing this morning after we talked, Glenn? So my office has some French doors that go out to the patio. And it's nice. I get to see my horses while I'm sitting here. The thing that's not nice about it is that Zenyatta, my dear, sweet
angel. Oh, the lovely angel, dog. Yes.
The lovely angel of a dog knows how to open doors. And that bitch never closes them behind her. So she opened at some point. So, oh my God, she had to act like a dog for 5 minutes. And she was outside last night and apparently was not okay with being outside and opened the door to my office and came in here and laid down on the dog bed that's in my office. She didn't, she didn't close the door. And there's a lamp on in my office. So when I walked in here, it looked like I was going into the rainforest with all the billion bugs and insects that are flying around the lamp. There are mosquitoes. I didn't know there were mosquitoes this big in Arizona. I can't believe I looked down and there's a giant monster beetle crawling around on my carpet. So right now, I would like to keep a very close eye on the vacuum cleaner that is in my room because there might be an insect revolt happening right now inside my vacuum cleaner. And they're like, well, let everybody, you know, I'm Finding Nemo when they're like, push, you know, and they run to the glass. Like that's happening right now in my vacuum cleaner. There's like a billion bugs that are like, if we just run, everybody run to the side, push. Oh my God. I gotta take the vacuum cleaner outside. I'm scared.
So if we hear screaming throughout the show this morning, we'll know why. A new bug has surfaced. Is that
I would be more worried about silence because that means they've snuck up behind me and put something over my mouth. They're working together as a team.
Are you guys like us too? See, we have the same problem you do in that you said the big, large beetle bug. We tend to have a lot of those in Florida.
You're in Florida. You guys have bugs the size of my
You
shoe.
Could, if you allowed yourself mentally, you could call them cockroaches because that's what they really are, right? But we prefer to call them beetles because it makes us feel better about the fact that they're in our house occasionally. So
yeah, but in Florida, they're so big, you'd be like a lion tamer.
Did
with
I tell
a
you
chair
what happened the other day? And I apologize to anybody eating breakfast. Did I tell you what happened the other day? So you know what these big cockroach beetle bugs look like, right?
Do I have a choice in this story?
No, you don't.
Okay.
So we're sitting on the couch and now everybody in Florida gets these. It doesn't matter what kind of home you have. My brother has a story the other day, which I will not tell you because that'll freak you out. But we were sitting on the couch. We were just watching TV and there's one of the air conditioning vents. Are there in the ceilings in the houses here? So the air conditioning vents in the ceiling right in front of us, right? And all of a sudden, one of those big beetles comes crawling out of the air conditioning vent in the ceiling and drops to the floor right in front of us.
And he made a loud crash when he landed, too.
Oh, that was freaky. Just something about the whole thing was freaky.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I see where you're coming from. And I understand that a roach dropping, you can call it whatever you want, a roach dropping from the roof is very frightening. But when I first moved here, we moved into a house that had been empty for quite some time.
Oh,
and
yeah.
I had like six girls over and we were all watching TV. I think we were watching Lost. And the largest scorpion just kind of saunters across the floor in front of us. So, and of course, we're all like, what? So I get it. Bugs are awful. That's why I fear for my life with this vacuum cleaner still in this room. I feel like I should take it outside and I don't know.
You know, one thing we tell everybody that kind of freaks them out when they come to stay with us, especially the non-Floridians, the Floridians get it. The non-Floridians do not, is we say when you go to the bathroom, you pick up the seat and you look behind the top seat.
Oh, geez.
Yeah. Yeah, that kind of freaks them out. But it's a wise thing to do when you live in Florida. Just saying.
Let's see. I'm trying to look at what the temperature is. It is 6:06 in the morning and it's 85 degrees. And I am wearing long sleeves and long pants right now because I'm so afraid of all the bugs. I had to go and get dressed again, like put on more clothes. Okay.
All right, let's stop talking about that and go to Jennifer, see if she can make it happier this morning.
I hope Chad does not sneak in this room. If he lifts up my hair like behind me, I am going to punch somebody.
I learned not to do that a long time ago with my wife after getting hit once.
So
I don't do that anymore.
I will cut somebody. I will
cut Jennifer, are you there?
On today's Crapulous Wednesday edition, I am here. The Horse Health Report will reignite the great hoof debate as Steve Krause stops by to enlighten us on the relationship between nutrition and hoof.
He says hoof. You have to say what the
guest does. He know? He's only like one of the best farriers in the country. What's he know?
In the third half of the show, Horse and Country TV, European Report, featuring the velvet voice of Victoria Spicer, who I'm sure says hoof.
Lord knows what she says. They're
says,
probably hoofies.
They're hoofies.
Hoofies. Sorry. Go ahead, Jennifer.
I'm done. You missed it. Stay tuned for the fray, folks.
And then Fiona Deering from Remote Coach in Australia is coming on to promote her first ever Australian episode tomorrow. We're going to have Australian radio tomorrow, you guys. How cool is that?
It is cool. And she's actually going, the only reason she's coming on live with us, because it's going to be after midnight when she comes on with us her time, is that she was going to be at an opera or something tonight. And she said, I can sleep through the whole thing and then I'll be awake for the interview. So I like her. She's a lot of fun. Well, let's do our Daily Winnies. Well, my Daily Winnie goes out to the Equus Foundation. That is the group that's kind of the, you know, the overseer of equestrian charities. And they just donated $250,000 in grants and scholarships to charities across the country that are doing what they call human-horse relationship or equine therapy, the therapy charities. And they really do make them go through hoops and make sure that they're legitimate and that they're doing everything right. They have to make available public detailed information about their equine policies and practices so that they can become part of the Equus Foundation, and especially if they're to receive any grants. So the Equus Foundation does good work in keeping an eye on all those charities out there. And we always, you know, we are always concerned because we get contacted all the time about the rescues in different places, and we won't put them on the air unless we're, you know, pretty convinced that they're real. And they're the ones that make sure, you know, with actual figures and look at the books and the whole thing. So they gave away $250,000 in grants. And I think that's a wonderful thing to some groups doing some great work with equine therapy. So
can you go on to the Equus Foundation and type in like, hey, is this group legitimate?
You know, I don't know that. I don't know if you can do that or not. I'm going to try and get him on the air. It's been a long time. I know we've talked to him before, but it's been years. So we're going to try and get him on the air and see how things, you know, exactly do work. I do not know that. I know that in the press release about this story, and I'm not going to go through them all because there were like 25 of them, they did list the charities who got this money. So you can take a look at that if you just go to the Equus Foundation's website.
Equusfoundation.org. I'm on there right now. I've got some people I'd like to check up on.
There you go. And you know, I'm sure that and again, I'm glad they're out there because we are concerned sometimes about some of the groups we hear about.
Oh yeah, for sure. Well, for those of you guys that listen a lot, you know that my husband and I bought an 11-acre parcel in Norman, Oklahoma, which is just south of Oklahoma City.
It's just south of Tornado Alley.
That's in Tornado Alley. Let's not lie.
I was trying to make it feel better. But you won't have great big scorpions.
That's true. There's plenty of good things about buying property there, and then there's some that are not so good. But the good part is that there is a racetrack in Oklahoma City, and it's called Remington Park.
I didn't know that.
Yeah, it's not, you know, there's no Breeders' Cup lined up to be running it at that place. And you know, sadly, like kind of like the one here in Phoenix, Turf Paradise, you know, you can run a whole lot and win a whole lot and still not get a lot of money. You know, it's like kind of the cheaper track. So Remington Park, actually, I think they do quarter horses too. Well, I got to give it up to them because a track like this is usually kind of the last stop, in my opinion, for horses that will be then sent to Mexico or sent to slaughter, you know, those things. Remington Park has adopted a policy that denies stall space. You cannot have a stall on their property to anybody who sells retired racehorses for slaughter. Vice President of Operations Matt Vance says that Remington Park's policy permanently revokes the stalls of trainers or owners who have been found in the past to have sold a horse to slaughter or known kill buyers. The policy also requires owners to carry out due diligence when purchasing horses and urges owners and trainers to support off-the-track thoroughbred rescue and adoption. Can we get him on?
Wow. Like,
how flippin' cool is that?
And you're right. That's kind of like the Penn National of tracks. So, yeah. You know, those guys are. I mean, they're running, what, $1 claimers, right? So,
I mean, pretty much claimers for free.
Exactly. So,
does anybody want this horse?
For them to do that, that is their population. I mean, their trainers that are at that track are in that category.
They are, and they're not anymore. Like, if you are known to have done that, I really want to get him on just to kind of find out what was the straw that broke the camel's back, so to speak.
Because you know there was one, and it involved a lawsuit somewhere.
Yeah, or just this guy. You know, it's becoming so much more, I don't want to say popular, but accepted to retire guys to off the track rescues and adoptions and to get them retrained. I mean, I just think Stuart Pittman and off the track thoroughbred groups, everybody that is involved with that has done such a great job, you know. And there are some of us that have always had off the track thoroughbreds. My first horse that wasn't, you know, like a backyard pony, my first horse was an off the track thoroughbred. That's what I wanted at the age of 10. I wanted thoroughbred that looks like Easy Goer. And I get it. I've done this my whole life, and I just couldn't be prouder of everybody now stepping up and getting involved in it as well. And I think it's really, really cool. I've got a backyard full of thoroughbreds, and I know all of our listeners have a lot of them too. And if you don't, then maybe someday you will, but at least you can appreciate something like this going on at Oklahoma racetrack. I know we have a lot of listeners that are not super fans of racing, but if this doesn't start to turn you around, I don't know what will. This is great.
Good for them. Let's hope they all do it.
Yeah. Good now, I have an update for you. Would you like a news story real quick? So remember I told you, I think it was last week, that a mane clipping from the Duke of Wellington's horse was going to be sold. There was a great, 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 whatever, that was going through some family papers and found a part of the mane of Copenhagen, which was the Duke of Wellington's horse that he rode in the historic Battle of Waterloo. It is said that Copenhagen valiantly carried the Duke for 16 hours continuously and emerged from the battle without injury. It's like, you know, their version of Reckless, you know, it's like this awesome, awesome horse. He was retired to the Duke's estate. He passed away at 28 years old. There's a marble headstone. Well, they were going through some paperwork and found a mane clipping and a letter saying that this was from Copenhagen, and so they decided to sell it. And somebody for this, I guess I was a little surprised. I thought it would go for more, but then of course spending this much seems crazy. But $3,044 in the lot of hair included a lock of hair from Copenhagen and a letter that was written saying that it was basically the hair, the mane of Copenhagen. But so in American dollars, $3,044.
Did you think it would go for more than that or less than that?
You know what? I mean, I'm never surprised when things go for more, because it just seems like that's the kind of... you know, we read stuff all the time. It's like, this painting sold for $2.6 million. You know,
right, so
I guess I thought it would go for more. But again, somebody just spent $3,000 on a lock of hair. So, you know, do with it what you will.
There you go. Now they can spend $100,000 and get them cloned.
There you go. That's probably what they're going for.
I don't know if hair does it. Can you get them cloned just with hair? I don't know.
I don't know
if you need more than that. But hey, we have, before we go on to some other news here, I have some news, and that is International Podcasting Day is September the 30th, and it's a day to raise awareness about podcasts and get more people listening to our shows.
That's a day? Like, yeah, that's a real day. Thing.
It is a real thing. International Podcasting Day on September 30th. And we have been invited, Horses in the Morning, to do something special. And what we're going to be doing, and unfortunately, Jamie can't do this because she lives on the other side of the country.
This is BS, by the way, because I have a 2-year-old who would love to come and do this. I am so... I can't believe it. I can't believe you didn't invite me. Go ahead. Carry on.
So we've been invited to go down to Disney World and actually do the show live from Disney World Stables there at Fort Wilderness. And so we're going to be heading down the day before, and Wendy's going to come up. She lives about an hour from there. She's going to come up. She'll co-host with me that day, and we'll have some guests from the stables and the very nice zoology, the manager of zoology, or I think that's her title, or something like that. Robin is going to be there with us, and we're going to actually do the trail ride at Fort Wilderness, which is right next to Magic Kingdom. We're going to do the trail ride, and then we're going to hang around that evening and see the carriages that they have there and stuff. And then the next morning, we'll be coming to you live from the stables. So we're very excited about that. It's on my bucket list of things to do, so I'll get to check that one off September the 30th. It should be a lot of fun.
That is awesome. How cool is that?
Yeah, it is really neat. And thanks to David Saunders, too, who actually started this ball rolling 6 months ago. And also a person I met at the podcast movement by the name of Lee Cockrell, who used to be vice president of the Disney Corporation. He was in charge of all the parks and hotels. He was also involved in this. He wanted to come over and co-host, but he's going to be in Australia doing speeches, so he can't do it that day.
Is there nothing David Saunders can't do?
I know. Well, he knows everybody. And, you know, he drove the Cinderella carriage and the parades there at Christmas time. So that's
He drove Cinderella's carriage.
Yeah, right. In Magic Kingdom. So, I mean, how much cooler do you get, right?
Well, I mean, he's David Saunders, and he's amazing. And I would just like to put out to the universe, David, that I would love to go to England and broadcast live from Buckingham Palace. So let's get to work.
Yeah, good with that.
Have the Queen.
And in case you don't know who we're talking about, David Saunders co-hosts the Driving Radio Show once a month, and he was the coachman to the Queen for 20 years. So, and Prince Philip. He's the one that actually, David is responsible with Prince Philip for starting CDEs, the combined driving events. That's who started them, was Prince Philip and David Saunders. So
he's just the most charming, sweet guy, too. It's just super.
I thoroughly enjoy doing the shows with him once a month. They're a lot of fun. Well, speaking of royalty, you led me right into my next story, and that's Daily Mail. I love the Daily Mail, by the way. The Daily Mail had an article about Prince Charles. Speaking of things being for sale, Prince Charles, 3 months before he married Diana, way, way back in 1981. Can you believe that wedding was 1981?
I can, because I don't remember it, because I was four.
Oh, you were you? Oh, it was really cool to watch it live on TV. And speaking of David Saunders, he drove one of the royal carriages with Prince Philip in it during the royal wedding in 1981, during Charles and Diana's wedding. So Prince Charles at that point was a young guy, and he heads over to do his royal duties to New Zealand. Well, apparently while he was on his 2-week trip to New Zealand, 3 months before his wedding to Diana, he plays polo. Well, he played a number of polo matches. Well, apparently had a problem while he was there falling off. He fell off 3 times during the polo matches, and the press in New Zealand got a wind. You know, they got the pictures and the video and they played it up. And then all the talk shows were starting to make fun of him, and he was not happy about it. So what came up for auction, I don't know what it went for, what came up for auction was a letter that he wrote to a friend of his about New Zealand and how they were picking on him. And he was not pleased at all. So he made his feelings apparently clear in this letter that he was not pleased that they were picking on him. He actually took a swipe at the young children that he was meeting in the letter and says, "The real problem is keeping my enthusiasm on each new day because I'm beginning to get fed up with the amount of nonsensical rubbish I take all day every day."
And jeez.
Yeah, and then he goes on in this to say, "The people of New Zealand, they'll pay a price for this." Yes, he goes on. He was not happy at all about this whole thing. And the letter, which was written on Buckingham Palace letterhead, they had copies of it there. It goes on and on. I mean, there was a lot more to the letter. And he says something about the children. Let me see if I can find that. Oh, this is the comment he made. Yeah, he said something about the children. He said, "If one more New Zealand child asks me what it's like to be prince, I shall go demented."
Did that happen? I mean,
it maybe happened right before he wrote this letter. He said in the letter, "It seems as though the main thing they know about me out here is that I fall off my horse. It all increases my determination to make them laugh out the other side of their faces one day."
Wow.
Whoa. Prince.
You know,
maybe there's a reason Diana left him.
Right?
Maybe there's a reason. Maybe there's also a reason the queen's going, "I'm not dying. I'm not giving the throne to him." So who knows?
Yeah, she's going to outlive him for sure.
She's motivated. God, so
and
I wonder how much this letter went for.
1981. When was his wedding?
It was in, this was April 1981. I think it was May, June, July. It was like July of 81, July or August of 81. Yeah. It was a huge event, and we all watched it on TV. We all got up at 5 in the morning. It's when we had 3 stations. You know, you didn't have cable. So everybody got up. It was on all the networks. It was a huge event. It was on all day. I remember watching it. And I didn't know that I'd eventually know somebody that was in it, David Saunders. Anyway, that's my funny story about the future King of England.
That is funny. Now, I have a list for you. It is Crappy List Wednesday. Would you like a crappy list?
Sure. We haven't had a crappy list in a while.
It's, you know, we like to celebrate.
Now, normally it's my job to bring the crappy list, but I'll give in today.
I know. It's my turn today because I found it and I didn't share it with you.
I don't have any idea what you're talking about.
So my crappy list, we like to celebrate the intelligent dogs that are around us with our horses. And, you know, there's a list of the most intelligent dog breeds, of course, including Border Collies and German Shepherds and Golden Retrievers. You know, there's a list that you can find about the most intelligent dog breeds. But there is also a list of the dumbest dog breeds. This is a list called the 17 Least Intelligent Dog Breeds. Now, the list comes from a ranking by Obedience Intelligence using data from the University of British Columbia professor and pet breeds, dog breeds topic. Pet breeds is a pet related website. So we've got.
Wait a minute. Canadian... After your morning, is your breed of dog on there? Is Zenyatta on there specifically?
That's the problem. Is she's too dang smart. She's not on the list. They're too smart. They just don't follow through, which is. They know how to open the door. They just won't close.
Shut it.
and you know, it's not like air conditioning isn't cheap. Yeah. Anyway. So the dumbest dog breeds coming in at number 17 is the Old English Sheepdog. The Old English Sheepdog. I had a neighbor that bred those next to me in Atlanta. And yeah, they're really dumb. Bless her heart. I'm going to say that a lot. Bless her heart. Now, this one I didn't understand because I feel like working dogs should not be dumb. But again, this is obedience intelligence. Number 16 is the Great Pyrenees. Great Pyrenees. They're very good.
Maybe because they have independent spirits, too. I don't know.
Yeah.
They're not listening to you because they got a plan.
They got something to do. Yeah, they got other stuff to do.
We have a job.
Number 15 is the Scottish Terrier, the Scotty.
Oh, yeah. Okay. Yeah. I kind of go along with that one.
It seems like terriers are on the list.
maybe the list should have been the most frustrating breeds. And that that would have been right on there, too.
Same thing. And I will agree when we start to get closer to the top. But number 14 is the Saint Bernard. Saint Bernard.
Well, they kind of just look not dumb so much as apathetic about life, don't they? They're just kind of there.
You know, they just kind of look like they're sad all the time.
Yeah, like, and just sweet, and we're just hanging out with you. I don't really want to do much. They're stoners. They're the stoners of the dog world.
Oh, my gosh.
I apologize to anybody who owns one.
The next one is the Bull Terrier, and that's Spuds McKenzie.
I think so.
Number 12, which are overrunning Phoenix, and actually a plane of 40 of these dogs were just shipped up to like New England because they're not very popular up there, and they're overrunning our city, is the Chihuahua. The Chihuahua. Oh,
dumbest. You know who owns Chihuahuas is Mary Kitzmiller.
Really?
Yeah, she owns Chihuahuas. You see her carrying them around like in her shirt because they're so tiny.
They're absolutely adorable. They're just really dumb. The Chihuahua for horse people. I wonder if horses do this. They just run right under the horses and bark.
They don't care.
I
think
crazy.
There's more Chihuahua pancakes around horse people than anything else.
Oh yeah. That's why they're running loose here. They keep breeding more because they keep getting squished. The number 11 is the Lhasa Apso.
Lhasa Apso. They're cute.
Don't they have squished faces?
Yes.
I feel like anything that ran into a wall is just not going to have a good
brain. It's going to be mentally challenged.
Number 11, Bull Mastiff. Yeah. I wonder, they're very sweet.
Yeah,
sweet. It's because they're just very...
They're another one of those dogs that's just kind of there, you know?
Yeah. Number 10 is the Shih Tzu. Another one bred for cuteness, not so much for the brain. It's like breeding a horse not for the good hoof.
Shih Tzus always look like they have ADD. Like they're just going everywhere.
And you can't see their eyes because they have so much nose hair.
Yeah,
but
you're right.
Their eyes are usually pointed. Yeah, they're looking in different directions too. It seems like their left eye goes to the right eye goes to the left. Anyway, the next one on the list is the God love them. Bless her heart. I've had one. I know it. Least trainable dog on the planet is the Basset Hound. Although I loved my piece of furniture cannot wait to have my...
You had that Basset Hound when we started this show.
I did. Yeah. I did. She was really
old.
She
was with you every day you did this show.
She was. And she became so old that she would have those night terrors when she was sleeping.
We would hear her.
And all of a sudden on the radio, you'd hear. Oh, gosh. Bless her heart. She was the coolest dog. Number 8 is. Oh, it's a tie. The number 8 is the Beagle.
And the most annoying dog ever. Sorry, everybody who owns a Beagle. But they're loud and annoying. Are we pissing off most of our listeners today?
Hey, we didn't make the list.
We're just reporting it.
Yeah. We're reading it. And if you own number 7, a Pekingese, you probably know your dog is not that smart.
I owned a Pekapom, which is a Pekingese Pomeranian cross. Imagine that.
What?
He was an annoying dog.
Number 9 is really cool, drooly, and awesome, but I guess not very smart. And that is the Bloodhound, big old giant Bloodhound. We move to number 5. I don't really know much about them. They're really adorable. Is the Borzoi. They look kind of like greyhounds.
Yeah, and they were the royal they were the royal dogs of most royal households in Europe was the Borzoi.
Really?
They were hunting. Yeah.
Number 4,
They are the Storm and Norman of the dog world.
Yes.
They're Norman. They're like Norman. Your horse.
Yep. Yeah. They will bolt.
They're big and bullies. Yeah. Number 4 is the Chow. The Chow.
I haven't heard good things about Chows.
I've not known many Chows that I really liked, but I could be wrong. If you have any of these dogs and you want to defend them.
I don't know that I've ever met a Chow in person.
Oh, yeah. See, I was a vet tech for a small animal clinic for like ever. And Chows are always aggressive, fear aggressive, and they were always difficult to handle. But they love their owners. They're very loyal dogs, too. But that doesn't make you want to groom them, which is why they always came in. And you want to express an anal gland of a Chow? I don't think so.
No. I really don't want to do that to any dog, to be honest.
No. Especially one that's a muzzled and you have its nose tied in the corner because it wants to
kill. How do you muzzle a Chow? There's no nose. You'd have to. How do you do that?
There's Chow muzzles.
Does it kind of look like, Hannibal Lecter with that mask? Is that what it kind of looks like?
I don't even remember, but they were never. We'd see them coming and then you have to blow dry them for like 3 hours. I'm like, shave this dog. Okay. Moving on. Yeah. A vet tech also is a kennel assistant. Bulldog comes in at number 3. Bulldog, one of the least intelligent dogs. My brother wanted a bulldog so bad. He went to the University of Georgia. He's like, I want a bulldog. And I go, you realize you have to wipe their butt after they poop. And he's like, I don't want a bulldog. Ever.
Changes mind real quick. Huh?
Changes mind real quick. I'm like, they don't have tails. You have to wipe their butt. Any dog that has to be born via cesarean.
Yeah.
Because the breed won't survive. Like something is wrong. Number 2 is a very cool dog. And I think they're highly intelligent. They're just misunderstood. And you might not have been around them, but the Basenji. They are almost, they talk almost, but they're not very easily trainable, the Basenji. And the number 1 least intelligent dog breed ranked by obedience intelligence from the University of BC. My mom had these when she was growing up.
Oh, if I'm going to guess from what my mom had, I'm going to say the Schnauzer.
Nope, not the Schnauzer. Those are actually kind of can be smart, maybe.
They were the most annoying dogs ever. Okay, go ahead.
It's like the Paris Hilton of the dog world, the Afghan.
Really?
Afghan hound the dumbest dog or the least intelligent dog.
I have met Afghans, and people who own Afghans have to be very patient because, boy, to comb that mess. Oh, my God.
Oh, God. My mom had, she's like, yeah, I had a little Austin Healey Sprite. I had 4 Afghans. And we had to drive from Florida to Maine or something. Like, you put 4 Afghans in a tiny little car and drove across the country. You're insane. That's one of the reasons she's crazy right now. I love her to death.
I can't imagine the hair. I know what we vacuum up with our cat. I can't imagine the hair with 4 Afghans.
Can you imagine driving like your windows down because they didn't really have air conditioner back then? Like the amount of hair that would get in your mouth. Like, all right, I'm done.
I'm glad to see greyhounds weren't on that list.
They were not.
I'm glad to see that.
So they just missed it.
And they missed your breed dog. They miss Enyatta's breed too, by the way.
I know. But you know what? That's because she's not dumb. She's smart and she's crafty.
Crafty. You know, in her world, it was you put her out at night. She had to be out there by herself. She was just going to find a more comfortable place and punish you for leaving her out. And you know what? Accomplished all those goals in one
do what
shot.
Every dog does. Go to the door and bark. Just bark. And I'll let you in. No, what did she do? Open up the side door of the house of the room that I won't see, and then leave the door open while the lights are on in the room all
night
long.
She probably looked really comfy when you came in this morning.
I cannot tell you guys how many bugs there were when I opened this door. I mean, imagine a door being open all night with the light inside. I mean, it was like, again, it was like the Amazon in here.
Ugh, all right. Carrie. Why don't we get to our first guest? Thank you for the list, Jamie.
You're welcome.
Why don't we get to our first guest?
Oh, my gosh. If he's still on hold, having to listen to all that. Steve Krause is with us. He's the head of Farrier Services. He's a lecturer, Large Animal Surgery Department of Clinical Science at the College of Veterinary Medicine at Cornell. Hey, Steve, how's it going?
Good morning. How are you?
Fantastic. Do you have a dog? And if so, what is it? Of course you have a dog.
I have two dogs, and they're both like rescue-type dogs. They're crosses, kind of. One's a Rottweiler cross, and the other one is, I think she's crossed with whatever was coming through that night.
Oh, she's crossed with the neighborhood. I gotcha. I should have known. You don't ask a farrier if they have a dog. You say what kind of dog and how many. That's what you have to say to a farrier. What was I thinking? Well, hey, you are on here today to talk a little
bit
about...
Hey, Jamie, real quick. Steve, are you on a speakerphone?
Yes.
Can you come off the speaker?
Okay, all right.
That'd be great. Thanks. All right, go ahead.
Oh, sorry. Steve is here today. That's better. Thank you. He's here to talk about the topic of nutrition and hoof health. And this is something I think that people do all the time. It's just, my horse has bad hooves. How do I make it better? What product can I put on my horse's hoof? What can I do this? So I was going to kind of take today, Steve, as a kind of question and answer from a typical horse owner, not somebody, you know, as super smart as me, but like a tip. I'm going to dumb it down. And be a typical horse owner and say, kind of, what can I do to make my horse's hooves better? And you guys are obviously staring at hooves and x-rays and all that all the time. And I've had farriers tell me to feed biotin or to do this or to soak them in this or to paint this on them. Let's actually hear from the pro, Steve. What can I do to make my horse's hooves better?
Well, the first thing you want to do is make sure your horse has good nutrition, good balanced nutrition that's right for your horse. And sometimes that's kind of hard to figure out because you really don't know what's in your hay. So you can get your hay, you know, tested. There's various testing places to do that, especially if you have trouble. You know, if you don't have trouble, then I wouldn't spend all that money unless there's a good reason to. And certainly feeding a balanced ration that has the right, you know, nutrients in it is the first place to look. Secondly, I would think about, you know, what's the hoof care? I mean, does the horse have regular hoof care that's appropriate for his needs? And so a combination of what the horse provides and then what the farrier can do to help your horse are the two main things that's going to go on. Beyond that, then there's special cases where you have problems with horse's feet, and sometimes it's nutritional. Sometimes what works feeding one horse is not what the other horse needs or can digest. We use the term bioavailability. So some nutrients are very bioavailable, easily processed and used for certain individuals, and then certain other individuals might need something different.
Okay, like what kind of examples of what are some things that would be bioavailable?
Well, any, you know, your nutrients that are hooked up to amino acids. So if you're feeding minerals, for instance, if your minerals are just like, zinc is very important for a horse's hoof growth, skin, many other bodily functions. And zinc is in most horse rations. But if it's just zinc, like zinc oxide or zinc sulfate, that is not very bioavailable to some horses. And so if you have zinc bonded to methionine, which is an amino acid, that zinc can get into the system as opposed to passing through it. So that's one example of how that would work.
Okay, so bioavailable means it's easily absorbed, not it's available correct. In your local tack shop. Okay. That makes sense. Okay.
Correct.
So let's start with nutrition. By the way, I was totally joking about being a old pro at this. I'm taking notes. Like, this is something that constantly, you know, as a horse person, you're constantly dealing with just trying to get the right balance for your horse's hooves. And I've got one standing out with one shoe because it just continually loses a shoe. So I'm interested to know, like, nutrition wise, what are some of the most important things that my horse needs to have a good hoof?
Well, things that form hoof is mostly protein. So the things, you know, that form good protein, you know, a keratin, which is, you know, protein in your feet without overdoing it. The trace minerals that, if you look in any, nutrition book, I mean, there's a list of things that all animals need for hair, skin, coat, and so on. And most, feed manufacturers, most supplement manufacturers have paid attention to this. It's just a case of how they interpret it and how they provide these nutrients for your horse. And what one horse needs may not be the same from another horse. It could be regional differences because there's difference in nutrients in the soil that produce, you know, the hay and the grain. And there's individual differences on what individual horses need. Different breeds probably have different needs, like your thoroughbreds definitely have, you know, thinner hoof walls and harder to keep a good foot on a thoroughbred. But some of the quarter horses have gone that way, too. So you really have to pay attention to the individual and the local, you know, situation.
Now, dumb question. Why exactly do some thoroughbreds and quarter horses and different breeds have such terrible hoof walls and hooves?
Well, it's kind of like, you know, the thoroughbred influence that we put in the horses is I call it a mixed blessing. There's a lot of thoroughbreds used in a lot of breeds in a way to refine and improve the breed. But the thoroughbred is fast because he has lighter bones and, you know, a thinner skin and so on. So lighter boned horses and thinner skinned horses are going to have thinner hoof walls, thinner soles, and so the thoroughbred influence, you know, has many different ramifications.
That is not the answer I thought I was going to get, and I like that answer. That's fantastic. So then we move down to hoof care. With the horse's hoof care, what are some of the main bullet points that you would recommend?
What's most important? Regular trimming and shoeing appropriate to the horse's work and environment is your main thing. As we talked about in the past, not all horses need the same thing. Different terrain, different work schedules, different individuals have different, you know, needs. But certainly, you know, knowing what your horse needs, not doing everything as a cookie cutter or one size fits all. These needs change from season to season. You know, in upstate New York, you know, we have a very dry summer now. We started off with a wet summer. And the feet respond to this. And then, of course, we're going to get winter and feet need, you know, so they're not the same all year round in all places. So the farrier schedule, trimming schedule, shoeing schedule needs to be adjusted to what the season and the climate's doing, as well as what the work schedule is. And it's always better to stay ahead of problems than to chase them.
Steve, are you telling me that right now every horse in the world does not need to be barefoot? And natural? Are you telling me right now some horses actually need shoes? Oh my!
Yeah, well, we've talked about that before. And, you know, I'm not going to waver from that for sure, because in my experience, I've seen a lot of good of what shoes can do for horses and keep them sound and competing. And just got back from Brazil teaching down there, and same thing, where, you know, we worked on horses and helped them with shoes.
I cannot imagine that being a farrier down in Brazil and being around a bunch of female horse-owning Brazilian women was that terrible of a job.
Oh, it was fantastic. Great people. They were wonderful to me. They have great horses, and they're but hoof care, no matter where you go, needs help.
Yes.
There's not enough good farriers, whether it be in the United States or around the world. And so we go and we help people wherever we can.
I just can't break him, Glenn. I just can't.
I have a question that'll break him. So now I have a question for you. You know, and I've, of course, been a horse husband now for almost 30 years. And one of the first things that I learned was to put, do you know, hoof oil on the horse's feet. That was one of the first things you learn as a horse husband, because your wife thinks you can handle that chore without screwing it up. So that's why we get that job. Does hoof oil actually do anything for a horse's foot?
It can be minorly helpful, and depending upon whose hoof oil and whose hoof, you know, dressing you buy, if you listen to what they say in their ads and their there's no FDA for hoof oil, so they don't have to prove anything they put on the bottle. That being said, some of them are beneficial if the horse has certain issues that, you know, you can help with, you know, the appropriate use of it. You know, and there's a difference between hoof oils and hoof coatings. Hoof coatings, like Tough Stuff, form a semi-permeable membrane, keeps good moisture in, bad moisture out, and kind of gives some structural help to the wall, fills in nail holes, where an oil, unless it's something that's readily absorbed into the hoof wall, which does not absorb things very easily from the outside, oil tends to stay on the surface. So again, it's more of a sealant. It'll fill nail holes and cracks. Some of the oils have some antibacterial agents in them, which is a good thing, antifungal agents, you know, because there's always, your hoof wall and sole is always being attacked by things you can't see. Some horses are pretty resistant to it, and some are not. So sometimes when these feet are falling apart, it's the stuff that you can't see that's doing it. So things that break that cycle are helpful to that. So again, depends on the hoof oil. Just a thing that you don't want to do, which some of the old timers would used to do, would put used motor oil on the horse's feet. That's the last thing you want to do.
I remember that.
That's detrimental to horse's feet. It's got all kinds of bad chemicals in it. It's not good for you. It's not good for the horses. And it may look nice and shiny, but it's not really helpful. It actually can be detrimental. So don't put used motor oil on. Animal-based oils and vegetable-based oils are better than mineral-based oil.
Okay, good. Good to know. So you mentioned horses need different things for problems that they have. And I would think that one of the biggest problems that most people have is a problem with thrush. What is the thing that you recommend for a horse with thrush?
We use a variety of products over the years, but thrush, again, can be aggravated by wet conditions, mud, poor stall cleaning, but is actually more of a systemic problem. We see horses in terrible conditions that have beautiful feet, and we see horses that are in beautiful, clean stalls that get thrush. So where's the answer there? And the answer is the individual horse. Again, thrush organisms are opportunists. They're all around all the time. So if a horse has a weak immune system, or a horse's conformation problems can cause thrush, because if the horse is not loading and unloading his hooves properly, the tissue across the frog tears a little bit, lets in these bacteria that are all around, and then it just gets ground in all the time. So that's, you know, one cause of thrush is just poor hoof function. So the other thing that has happened over the years, I remember when I was growing up at summer camp, we used to lime our stalls all the time.
Oh, right? We did it all the time.
As much thrush and canker. And now we've gotten away from that because people don't want to get white powder on their black boots and all that kind of stuff. But I think we should be using lime more than we are in many cases. And that would stop a lot of stuff.
Speaking of old timer kind of remedies, when I was a kid, they would take, you would take bleach and like do like a 50-50 bleach water and spray that on the thrush. Is that something that you discourage?
No. That's definitely no. Bleach is an irritant. Bleach burns the surface and actually irritates the tissue and will actually make it more vulnerable to irritation and infection. But if you want to put something on thrush, there's a great product called Thrush Buster by Mustad. And that's one of the best products around for that. Also, Durasol is another great hoof hardening thrush product. And those carry the antibacterial agents as a stain into the tissue. So it's effective over, you know, a period of time rather than something that just washes away easily. So treating thrush with those products is, that are long lasting are helpful. It helps dry the area up and disinfect the foot. But I can't remember what else was part of your question there.
No, you nailed it. So I just want to know, where were you when I was at a boarding stable in Atlanta when I was about 12 years old learning all these terrible habits? Thank you.
Well, these are like these myths that kind of find their way into the horse, you know, system. And bleach is, you know, again, kind of an irritant. Bleach is a chlorinator, which has a very harsh effect on tissue. We use a product called White Lightning, which is a trade name for chlorine dioxide. We use it here at Cornell to disinfect feet and really clean out some really nasty stuff. And we activate it. We make chlorine dioxide gas by activating it with white vinegar, one part white vinegar, five parts chlorine dioxide, or White Lightning is its trade name, to 10 parts water. And what we do is we take a used IV bag, we have lots of them around this hospital here, and then we cut the end off and we just put like a, you know, about 2 or 3 inches of chlorine dioxide solution in the bag, and then we pull it over the foot and duct tape it around the foot and let it sit for 20 minutes, and it surgically cleans that foot. And it really breaks the cycle of all this fungi, yeast, mold, you know, bacteria is in there. And it really does a heck of a job.
Yeah, I've seen that at clinics. That's really cool. Well, listen, I could go on and on about this forever. I hope maybe we can touch base a little bit about this later on. And I hope you don't think I'm some barefoot person because I have event horses and horses need shoes when you're doing that sport.
We've talked before about this.
I know. I was just like, huh, I wonder if he was thinking I was, I get sarcastic every now and then, Steve. I just want to make sure you knew that. But Steve Krause, head of farrier services at Cornell University. We thank you so much for joining us as you do every month. And I look forward to talking to you again soon.
Okay. Well, we'll see you next month then.
Thank you.
Yeah, we ran out of time, but you guys can find him at on Facebook at the Cornell Farrier Program has its own Facebook, and it's very, very interesting. So go on there and check that out. Also, vet.cornell.edu. You can check him out there. Steve, thank you very much.
Okay, thanks. Have a good day.
All right, bye.
Well, we are going to take a break for our song today, and I have a little musical note here. You remember we play songs by a girl who's a South Florida girl, horse girl named Raquel Renner, and we
she's great.
Yeah, we play her songs every once in a while. Well, she was doing a local gig down there in Florida, and she posted this morning. I guess it was last night, and she posted this morning who was in her audience, but Rick Springfield.
No way.
Yeah, so she has pictures of her and Rick Springfield. Apparently,
just
Rick.
I wish that I had Jesse's girl.
Apparently, Rick was in the audience listening to her sing. Now, how tripped out would you be if you're just up there doing your set and you look down and see somebody like Rick Springfield watching you?
Jesse's girl.
You'd be pretty tripped out. I wish I hadn't brought it up. All right, coming up next.
I wish I knew more of it other than I wish that I had Jesse's girl.
That's all you know. Courage in the Saddle by Bren Hill. And then we're coming back with Victoria from Horse and Country TV because guess what's coming up in England? Burley. We're going to talk a little Burley.
Bobby Adair, listen to my tale. It ain't much of a story, so you better listen well. In southeast Oklahoma, when I was but a boy, I ran many a mattress and I never wanted more. Believed that I could ride anything with hair. Then one California morning I found myself there at Los Alamitos Racecourse in 1962. Where the story starts and ends is where you find the dream comes true. Courage in the saddle, face into the wind. You ride each time like you won't live again. If you're gonna ride to win, son, it's gonna be a battle. Better have a heart of steel, courage in the saddle. Dial was 10 to 1 in 64 on May the 9th. We were 25 large richer when she crossed the finish line. Night of races at Bay Meadows, 68 to 73. There never was a jockey who had won as much as me. We were back at Alamitos in May of 84. Thick fog down the straightaway, mud on the racetrack floor. John Critter on face in the crowd, turn left in front of me. And the bottom side of running hooves was all that I could see. Courage in the saddle, face into the wind. You ride each time like you won't live again. If you're gonna ride to win, son, it's gonna be a battle. Better have a heart of steel, courage in the saddle. Crush my foot and ankle, my shoulder and my face. But my longing for the racetrack no surgery could replace. So as a 20-year outrider, I'll finally retire from the course at Alamitos, the place I first caught fire. And the years have passed right through me, I'll never be the same. And the changing times in politics, Lord, we ought to be ashamed. For we're short of field and horses, Midwest jockeys, they're all through. Where the story starts and ends is where you find the dream comes true. Courage in the saddle, face into the wind. Ride each time like you won't live again. If you're gonna ride to win, son, it's gonna be a battle. Better have a heart of steel.
That was Courage in the Saddle, and that was brought to you by Bren Hill. You can find all of his music at brenhill.com.
I must tell you, Glenn, I thought you were going to play Raquel Renner, which is why, like,
if I had seen the article about, I saw it about 1 second before I talked to you.
Oh, so that's your ADD, right?
Like, yes.
Okay.
I saw it.
I'm going to play
it,
a song from Bren Hill, but you know that girl Raquel Renner that we
play
all the
time? I would have. Sorry about that.
I was like, this isn't Raquel.
We are Horses in the Morning. We're here. I'm Glenn Geek. Jamie Jennings is out on the West Coast, and Coach Jen is in the producer chair. And coming to us all the way from England.
Now it's time for the European Report with Horse and Country TV.
That's right. It is time for the European Report. And, of course, Victoria Spicer joins us all the way from Europe once a week to fill us in on what's going over there. Hi, Victoria.
Hi there. How are you both?
Good. You sound so good.
I'm glad.
It's lovely. So, Victoria, we haven't talked to you in a couple of weeks. What have you been up to?
I went to Aachen for the European Championships, so that was really cool.
Rough life you have over there, just hanging out with all going to Aachen. And...
It was amazing. It's not quite like anywhere else I've ever been. It has a huge purpose-built stadium, an amazing big show ground, and just loads of amazing shops, and I couldn't go shopping, so I had to work too hard. It's not fair.
That's not fair.
You could go broke in your job.
I could. I don't get a chance to go shopping. I'm asked this all the time, and every time it's badminton or a Hickstead or whatever, I just don't get to see a trade stand from one day to the next.
It's probably good because you really could spend all your money plus some with all the cool places you go.
I could. You know, it's my boyfriend's birthday next week, and I asked him if he'd mind getting a heavyweight turnout rug for his present, and apparently he wouldn't like this, so I tried.
Well, what's going on? You got Burley coming up.
We do. We've got a bit of a venting frenzy over the next couple of weeks. So Burley starts tomorrow, well, today actually, with the trot up, or the jog up as you guys would call it. And it's dressage day Thursday, Friday, and then cross country Saturday. So that is really exciting. And we've got Michael Jung, the reigning European champion, will be there. So it's his first ever trip to Burley.
Now, tell us about Burley, for we have a lot of new listeners to the show from around the world. So fill them in a little bit about Burley.
Well, there's 6 four-star events in the whole world and every year, and we have 2 of them here in the UK. So badminton in May and then Burley every September. And it is a 4-star event held in a beautiful parkland in the Midlands. And it's got a stunning country house as a backdrop, like all our events.
Yeah, like all your events have these castles as backdrops. Yeah.
So, yeah, it's exciting. I can't wait. And it's... The reigning winner, Andrew Nicholson, sadly won't be competing this year as he's still recovering from a bad riding accident. So he's on the mend, but he's going to miss the rest of the season. So it's going to be quite strange not having him there because he's just been just phenomenal at Burley in the last few years.
Jennifer will post a link to it on our Facebook page. Burley also has a great website, and they have Burley TV and all different kinds of things. They have the course walks and everything. They do a great job with social media. So in addition to horseandcountry.tv for following the action there, you can also go directly to their website. It's really cool. I like the cross-country preview. I watched that, and it was Captain Mark Phillips doing a fence-by-fence guide. So he's
the course designer. And Burley is quite famous for being probably the toughest four-star event in the world. You know, badminton's the most famous, but Burley is just so huge. So some of those fences have to be seen to be believed.
Now, Burley's house, using that term,
house.
Yeah, liberally here.
Stately home.
Yeah, has about 1,000 rooms. I'm sure you get invited in for tea every time you go, right?
I wish I did. But sadly, I never really get to go to Burley. I'm actually down at Hickstead again this weekend because we have our national show, the All England Jumping Championship. So I'm missing Burley, but I shall be following it from Hickstead.
Are you in the press room right now?
I'm actually in the sponsorship and trade office.
Okay, so we can hear people in the background. It's kind of cool. So
I'm sorry.
No, that's fine.
They're preparing for the next few days, so it's going to be a busy few days.
No, that's great.
I'm currently distracting everyone in the office with my radio appearance.
We really are. And then we head over to talk about the European champion, who's wearing an orange coat. So I'm assuming that he's from the Netherlands.
We've already had the jumping and dressage Europeans, but next it's the eventing Europeans, which are in Blair Castle in Scotland. So we've got a few days after Burley to recover and then straight up to Scotland for the Europeans, and it's going to be brilliant. And Britain always do really well when we have the European Championships at home, so I'm hoping we might be able to win a gold medal, because the last time, 2 years ago in Sweden, we didn't win any team medal at all. So it's time to redress that and get back to our gold medal winning ways.
And how about Mark Todd? Mark Todd, who I think is 56 now, if I remember right. Mark, of course, retired and then came back and, you know, has been on the scene over there in England forever, it seems like.
Glenn, he's not 56. He's like 34. He gets younger. He hit 50 and starts counting backwards.
But they sold him. He's been sold.
He has been sold. He gave up his services for this really good charity called the Eventing Family, which is raising money for riders that have been involved in accidents, or young Ben Hobday, who's fighting cancer. So loads of riders offered their services or put up amazing auction lots. And imagine winning Mark Todd for the day. I was quite jealous of whoever bought him. But sadly, I don't have £1,200 to buy Mark Todd.
Hold on. He went pretty good. Go ahead, Jamie.
You get to buy Mark Todd for a day?
You do. And he said he'll do whatever you ask him to, presumably within reason. and he said, you know, whether he wants him to ride your horses or give you a lesson or whatever. So, yes, I'm very jealous of the person who won Mark Todd for the day.
£1,200, right? You could like hold a clinic for a day and ride a horse in every clinic and have everybody else pay for it. Oh, my gosh. What
yeah, you know, actually, £1,200, you'll pay that for a good clinic. So this is a pretty good deal.
Yeah, like, exactly.
A full day. Mark Todd, polish my boots. Mark Todd, clean my saddle. I want to see shining in it by morning.
If I remember right, didn't you say you grew up with Harry Mead, the jumper?
I think the last time I mentioned Harry Mead, I said that he grew up with Prince William and Prince Harry, but I'm glad that you've confused them with me.
Well, okay. I just saw that Harry, a dinner for Harry four Mead. With Harry Mead also went for £860, and I didn't know if you had bought that.
No, sadly not. And okay. I'm not sure whether that includes him cooking you dinner or whether you then have to stump up the bill for the four of you. So
yeah, because I can imagine McDonald's is not on the menu when Harry meets.
Possibly not. No, Harry's too posh for McDonald's.
Either him or Mark Todd. Just called him Farm Boy. Farm Boy. I just called Farm Boy for a Farm Boy.
Should you clean? Oh, can you imagine if the person had Mark clean the stalls? Anything you want. There you go. There's 20
he
of them.
He did
right
offer.
Over there.
He said he'd muck out. So, yes. Very generous.
That's cool.
That's amazing.
How about Verlegro? What's this all about, him going from a star to a famous brand?
Well, he now has his own publicist, although presumably he didn't hire her himself. But yes, there is now, you know, a Velcro range of merchandise and with shampoo and rugs and a T-shirt. And so, yes, he's now got, he's so famous, he has his own range.
Oh, wow. You know, and I heard that he gets a ton of mail. Apparently
he
gets a ton, like real mail through the mail, you know, which nobody does anymore.
No, it's quite sweet. Presumably, again, he doesn't open it himself, but he does get sack loads of mail, yes.
Wow. Can you imagine? That's something else. I know he has a ton of followers on Facebook, too. More than Thor, I hate to tell you, Jamie.
He might beat out Thor. Thor has not gotten one letter in the mail.
No?
I mean, seriously.
What's wrong with his fans?
I know.
Well, I'll send him a letter. So he feels special.
And coming from England, you might get it in 3 months. So,
yeah.
Hey, we got to talk to you real quick. We covered this story earlier in the show, but I wanted to mention it to you. And, you know, Daily Mail over here, I don't know if anybody in England actually reads Daily Mail, but we love Daily Mail. So we read it all the time.
We love to hate it, I'm afraid.
Yeah, so there you go.
Yeah.
They were selling Prince Charles's letter about hating the people of New Zealand. Did you see that article?
I didn't know.
Yeah, he wrote this letter apparently to a friend, and they were auctioning it off. This was 3 months before the wedding to Diana back in 1981. And he wrote this letter after he'd been to New Zealand and he'd fallen off his horse playing polo 3 times. And the people of New Zealand, you know, the press caught a hold of that, and there was all these jokes and articles about him falling off. And apparently he wrote this scathing letter about how he hated the children and they were a pain in his butt, and this whole tour was, and he was going to make the New Zealanders pay. So I was curious if you had seen the letter. And is he known for being like a little snarky and not happy about his role in life? And is that why the Queen hasn't abdicated, because she doesn't want him to take the throne?
Now you're testing my knowledge of royal politics here. No, I think Prince Charles is usually fairly laid back. It's usually his dad that says things that gets him in trouble. So Charles isn't known for that. But, you know, he's getting a bit older, so maybe it's starting to happen. And we're going to be getting more and more of these stories.
I think the closer he gets to the throne, the more of these stories you're going to see.
Exactly.
Yeah. All right. So you didn't buy that letter either. Okay.
I didn't. Okay. No. I'd rather have Mark Todd, to be fair.
Me too. Well, thank you, Victoria. We really appreciate you taking time out of getting ready for your show and being with us.
You're very welcome. I will speak to you next week.
Horseandcountry.tv. See you, Victoria.
Bye.
So nice of her to do that, wherever she is at the time.
Right. That's amazing.
So if you had a choice to go to badminton or Burley, which would you pick? I mean, just as a spectator, even, not as a rider.
Oh my gosh. No, I figured spectator. I didn't even think rider.
Well, I didn't know.
I mean, badminton's so famous, but just to be on the grounds at Burley with the castle, Burley, I think I would pick Burley.
Yeah, I kind of, you know, I don't know. It's a tough one. Tough one. I think I'd kind of pick Burley too. Although I hear the shopping and the whole atmosphere of badminton's really cool. So
yeah, but we have Rolex. Like I've been to Rolex. I want something different. Give me something different.
Well, that's
true. I mean, because the badminton would be so similar to anything I've experienced. Hey. You know what? If I was over in Europe, I would probably just spend time pub touring. Like, let's go to another bar. Didn't you want to go see Burley? Yeah, catch it on the iPhone.
Hey, they have alcohol there. They serve alcohol there. You'll be fine. You'll be fine.
That's true.
Hey, before we head off to Australia to talk about tomorrow's first Australian episode with the co-host of that, Fiona, we're going to go to her shortly. I just wanted to tell you that Guatemala made the horse news in the last couple of days because they have something that's very popular and very famous over there called drunken horse racing. And it's not the horses that are drunk, by the way.
It's really riders. Famous, the right word to use. Well, I've
infamous
never heard of
is
it.
More the right word. Probably.
Okay. Yes.
It is famous in it's the Mayans, the descendants of the Mayans there. They live in the high altitude of the villages in Guatemala. And apparently one of the things that is very popular there is riding. They do these races through the streets. They clear the streets and they do these races through the streets while totally plastered. To the not the horses again, the riders. So they'll get the horses lined up, and then they bring the riders over who are really drunk. They put on these traditional ceremonial outfits, including these wacky kind of flowery, I don't know what kind of hats they are. And some of the riders are so plastered, they have to tie them to the saddle. So,
oh my God.
So they tie them to the saddle. They kind of throw them up there, tie them to the saddle, and then they send them on this race through town. Now, they said about half of them don't make it. Not that the riders don't make it on the horse through the entire race. The riders kind of fall off. And then some of them are crossing the finish line kind of hunched over just because they're tied to the saddle. They can't fall off. So, and they do this several times a year. It's a very popular event.
I'm going to point out what would be probably the obvious, that the person who was in the crowd that was writing this article said that most of the spectators were men. Men gambling on men, yes. Running horses drunk around.
Through the town. Yeah. Yep.
That part was not shocking. did think it was funny. 8 relatively healthy looking horses were gathered at the makeshift starting line as less healthy looking riders staggered around being fitted with special hats festooned with long colorful sashes.
We get the stories out of Texas all the time who are the guys who are doing pub crawls, who are doing bar crawls on a horse, and then they get arrested for drunken riding. But I thought this was a fun one because it's out of Guatemala.
Some riders were so drunk they had to have their hands tied to the saddle by their friends, in air quotes. Others screamed obscenities in Spanish and English as they flew past spectators at breakneck speeds, some still holding cans of Tecate.
I think it's the way the horses get revenge. It's like their time of the year to get revenge on the riders, right? Because pretty much the rider has no control and the horse can do whatever they want. So it's like, I think they take, the horses have a little betting pool. I'll bet you a flake of hay that I can get my rider off before the finish line. You know, you think they have their lone little betting pool? I bet you they do.
it was never exactly clear who won or what the prize might be. Advil, a heating pad, exemption from next year's race. But in Todos Santos, it was recently reported that the winner of the annual drunken horse race was given a live chicken and the title of El Capitan.
Big prizes there in Guatemala for the drunken horse race.
Yeah, chicken, chicken.
I am sure that they don't do anything like that in Australia. And we're going to find out because we have Fiona on with us who is doing her debut tomorrow on Horses in the Morning as we premiere the Australian episode, because we have a ton of Australian listeners and we need to show them some love. And Fiona agreed to do that. Good evening, Fiona.
Good evening. Were you just mentioning alcohol?
Yes, we were talking about a drunken horse race they do in Guatemala. So can you hear us, Fiona?
I think I've got you. I think I've just nearly done the two glasses of champagne race to get home from the theatre to make this phone call.
What were you seeing? I thought it was like an opera or something, wasn't it?
Yeah, I went and saw Mary Stuart. Not surprisingly, it doesn't end well for Mary.
You said you were probably going to take a nap.
A little bit off with her head at the end.
you said you were going to take a nap during it so you'd be awake for our interview, because it's after midnight where you are. Did you get the nap in?
I didn't, and I always get a nap in the opera, but it was actually quite good, so I stayed awake.
I've been to a symphony twice in my life, and I think I slept through half of each. So
it's the warm, dark room, nice music. Like, you just go to sleep.
Yeah.
And wine.
Usually
you're drinking yes, wine.
Well, that too. Yeah. That too. Interval drinks, always a danger.
Well, Fiona, we want to welcome you as the newest host here on the Horse Radio Network. Tomorrow we'll premiere the first episode. What kind of things are we going to do on the Australian episode of Horses in the Morning?
Well, tomorrow we've got the lovely Jade from the Confident Rider blog, which is an Australian-based blog all about nervous riders, and lots of resources on there. And we've also got Tanya from Harness Racing Victoria Hero Program, which is all about rehoming the standardbred racehorses and life after racing. But I'm hoping I'm going to be able to present a whole heap of different stuff to you guys. So everything from racing to pleasure riding to, I don't know, whatever comes up.
Well, you have such a horse culture down there in Australia. It's kind of, you know, it's kind of been part of your history, and there's still a lot of it left down there, isn't there?
Lots of space.
Yep. A lot of space to ride. You got a lot more of that than we do.
We sure do.
Yeah. And, you know, I'm really excited about this. Australia, New Zealand, we kind of combine the two, the Down Under crew, in our listener numbers. And Australia, New Zealand is now just about equal with Canada as our number two listening base. So we're really excited to be bringing some of the accents. We love the accents, too. So I'm really excited to be bringing that to the audience as well.
Oh, that's fantastic that there are so many listeners down here. That's really good to hear. And, you know, is it wrong to have some rivalry with Canada?
No, that's fine.
Okay.
No, you can
have all
the rivalry you want. We endorse that here.
Like the two nicest people in school hating each other.
Yes.
Nobody hates Australia or Canada. Like, you can't just have a rivalry. You guys should be best friends.
Okay. Well, we'll hold hands and sit down and hang out.
We need to do Canada versus Australia in a trivia competition one morning on the show. We're definitely going to have to do that. We're definitely going to have
awesome.
To do that.
I have a question. Like, Australian, hey, Jennifer, we can hear you typing. So I have a question. When you are looking at American horsemanship and all this, and you see all these natural horsemanship clinics and people over here doing what they do, I don't know if that's the same thing that you guys have in Australia. Do you have a natural horsemanship movement over there?
Yeah, well, a couple of our most, I guess, famous may be the wrong word, but a couple of our guys are over there doing pretty good things in Clinton Anderson and Warwick Schiller.
That was Guy McLean. And Guy McLean, of course.
And Guy, yeah.
And are you guys a fan of these guys, or are you like, oh, thank God they went to America and got out of Australia?
No, no, not at all. I think there's actually a lot more awareness of that, you know, particularly those methods from people like Warwick and Clinton being a better way. You know, it's a better way to communicate with our horses. And I certainly see a lot more of it in my own coaching, that I sort of mention these methods to people and they don't look at me anymore like I've sprouted another head. They're kind of quite willing to take it on.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Are you guys pissed that they've come over here and we've stolen them?
Well, Warwick comes home quite often, so he's back here 2, maybe 3 times a year. I know I'll be seeing him over at Equidays in New Zealand in about 6 weeks, and then I think he's doing a tour through Australia after that. So he's home a couple of times a year. And I think I saw something that Clinton's coming back and doing something in Queensland early next year or late this year. So, you know, I guess it's still a small market number-wise in Australia. So for guys like that, it does make sense for them to go overseas and go to the States. There are more people.
And the ones that haven't come over here have gone to England and are doing it over there.
Well, that too. Yeah. And I mean, most of our eventers are based out of the UK. Most of our eventers who are vying for Olympic selection and our show jumpers are based in the UK and Europe because they can simply get to more competitions and they have to cover less ground to get there.
Yeah. Well, yeah. We're so excited to have you, Fiona. She's a remote coach, and it's remotecoach.com, right?
Yeah, remote-coach.com.
Okay, and we'll be here tomorrow morning. Thank you so much.
We will. Can't wait.
All right, we'll see you then.
Bye-bye.
Sleep well.
I will. Have a good day, guys.
Take some Advil, drink a lot of water. If you've been drinking champagne, trust me, it never works out.
I love champagne. You know, I can't drink alcohol anymore because of my diet, but the one thing I do miss is champagne. I really do like champagne.
Really? Like, I always felt like champagne was for celebrating. If I drink champagne, bad things are going to happen.
Oh, I could drink a bottle of champagne every night if I could. I love
really?
I love that. You know, I do like champagne. I don't know. Maybe it's the bubbles, but
I don't know. I just know that I get in trouble when I drink too much champagne.
Well, Really Bad Ads is coming up on Friday. You missed it last week. We had a great round last week.
Did you?
Oh, it was funny. Wendy was on. We learned that when Wendy does the morning show, she has to have a second cup of coffee. And she was like bouncing off the walls. So Wendy was very funny last Friday. And we had a really good batch of ads. And Jennifer, are we confirmed? Are we giving away the fork this week? Are we drawing a number? Is that right?
Yes, we will be drawing the number for the fork.
Yes, good. All right, so you're going to win an EquityMFG.com Flex and Fork. And am I correct also that the people who submit for this week will be included in that?
That is correct.
All right, so get your ads in. You still have 2 days. You have today and tomorrow. Get them in by Thursday evening. Send them to Jennifer at horseradionetwork.com. Put Really Bad Ads in the subject line and copy and paste the entire crappy Craigslist or Facebook ad into the email and send them off. And we'll be doing that on Friday. And Jennifer, you get all the credit here. Tell us who the big guest is on Friday.
On Friday, we're going to have Jerry Crawford, who has been on the show several times before, owner of Keen Ice. And I thought it was only right that we give Jerry the opportunity to come on the show and brag on his horse because he was very, very kind and humble to come on the show the day after the Belmont and chat with us after his horse came in third. So it was only appropriate. Now that he's come in first and beat AP, we'll forgive him.
Well, he came on before the Belmont and was talking about how, you know, he really thinks he can do it and they want to win. They don't want to win, but they want to win. And then to come on afterwards was really, really cool that he came on and talked about it and the experience. And he's a really big fan of American Pharoah. And so he has shown after the Travers nothing but class, nothing but class. There's articles written about him being a classy winner. So we just had to get him back on.
Are you going to be okay? You're not going to have a meltdown. You're going to be okay, Jamie.
You know, if he was a, you know what, then I would have a meltdown. But he's so nice and he's really funny and he's really charming and he's very just, he's a classy guy, you know. And so, no, I won't attack him. Okay. I will be supportive and happy.
I mean, how happy must they be that they won that? I mean, because Key Nice has been kind of just always right there, you know.
Yeah. It's like, yeah.
And he did run a really, really good race. I mean,
oh my gosh. He was amazing in that race. Well, I mean, Frosted's job was to go out there and wear out AP, and he did it. And then Keen Ice comes out.
Did I read that actually that was one of the best times that American Pharoah has had?
Yeah, I think so. The last quarter, anyway. It was a really fast race, and Keen Ice just, I did read that Jerry and Dale Roman's a trainer. They actually all thought that he was going to win. They were like, he could win today. They thought they had it even before the race. So. It'll be interesting to talk to him, and I'll be nice because he's a nice guy and I do like him, and I was very happy for him, and Keen Ice ran a hell of a race. So, you know, Secretariat lost after the Triple Crown. He lost Travers too. So it happens.
That's right. It happens. Well, and we're glad that he's willing to come on again, and thank you, Jennifer, for being the best producer ever.
That was awesome.
Just saying. Well, that's it for today. You got anything else? We're good.
Well, I did want to tell you a couple things real quick. We have a few minutes. Wise Dan just completed his final breeze, and he is slated for the September 13th Woodbine Mile, baby, in Canada. That's right. This is his first race back after the broken leg. This horse is amazing.
I'm hoping we're going to have somebody on from Woodbine right before that. So we'll hopefully get somebody on that Friday.
Well, I just think that if Jennifer's such a good producer, why don't we get Charlie Lopresti, the trainer of Wise Dan? I mean, why hasn't he been on? Hello?
Well, why hasn't Carrie Underwood been on? I think it's the same reason.
She's really not that thorough. another thing is the Travers had the best ratings in 20-something years.
Oh, is that right?
Yeah, it was crazy. I guess between 5:45 and 6:05, they had 3.4 million viewers for a horse race. That was not a Triple Crown race. That's amazing.
That's pretty good.
That's a huge number. Yeah. They're not counting the thousands of people that were at each place that was broadcasting the race, like at Del Mar. They stopped racing at Del Mar and broadcast the race in the middle of the infield on the big screen.
And that's pretty good considering this was a stakes race, but not a one that you would normally stop a race, you know, stop the racing for.
No, I mean, it was just awesome. Everybody in that whole place just froze and watched. And it was really inspiring. It was really cool. And so those are my two more news stories.
Real quick, give everybody an update because they're going to be mad that you haven't mentioned him at all. What's the new giraffe? Tell us about Storm and Norman and what's the update?
Storm and Norman is doing good. He is currently in the backyard with a missing shoe. So, hey, I got
Where
home
do those from- missing shoes go, by the way?
I don't know. Gosh darn it. You know, when I got him, he had those giant, monstrous, high-heeled, stupid shoes on that the former farrier had decided he needed, and the girl paid, you know, a ton of money for him. And so as soon as I got him, you know, I'm like, I can't ride him in these. I need to pull him. And she's like, well, he just got those on. So I think the nail holes are pretty fresh where my farrier had to put some in. So she's going to be back out on Thursday to reset him. So Norman's got a reprieve. I went on vacation. I came back. He's missing a shoe. And he's got pretty darn good feet. And I think it's the first horse in forever that I've bought that doesn't have a club foot. So it's actually a positive thing, but he just needs a new shoe.
Do those
so.
Missing shoes go the same place as the missing socks in the wash?
Probably. You know what? My God, when we die, we're going to go up to heaven, and like on the way there, you're going to be like on an elevator, and the doors are going to open at a floor that just has horseshoes and socks, and it's going to close and keep going. You know, that's what's going to happen. You're exactly right. Ding! Wrong floor. Close the doors. Don't shut them. Ding!
And on that note, let's call it a day. We'll be back tomorrow with the Australian episode, and then Jamie will be back on Friday. Take care, everybody.
Spay, neuter, geld. You guys have a good one. Ding! Can you not get that working? Do you want to sleep? I think Jesse's a girl again.